Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon, Upstate. Welcome to Upstate Outdoors with Philip Gentry and Tommy Springer.
Yes, indeed.
You're listening to 106.3 WORD. It's the outdoor show coming to you every Saturday from noon to 2 from the indoors.
From the indoors.
So we have got a great show on tap for you today. We are, well, actually, if you're a Ute, what was that movie? Where they said, what's a Ute?
Yeah.
My cousin
Vinny. I can't remember
that. My cousin Vinny or something like that. What's a Ute? It's Ute Day. It's Ute Day turkey hunting. Yeah, we have to do it in a younger voice. There you go, something like that. Do a Jake voice.
Jake's weird to do.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he sounds like a hen really yelping crazy. It's a strange noise. It really is.
But so today is Youth Day for turkey season. Turkey season will open next week on Wednesday, and that's going to kind of be the theme for our show. But before we get into that, I wanted to kind of rehash, and I wrote the Upstate Outdoors blog about this. You know, last week we talked with Jay Cantrell, the assistant director of DNR, about the proposal to move the season dates. And so I pretty much recapped that in the Upstate Outdoors blog if you missed it last week. So we'll cover that. And then we're going to go out to the field and talk with Mark Carroll from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. He is a wildlife biologist out in Union County, and he was doing a youth hunt this morning. So we'll check in with Mark and find out how his opening day of youth turkey hunting season started.
It was a beautiful one.
Also get a forecast on kind of what he thinks about the upcoming season. Also, it got a really cool story from Carolina Sportsman about a kid who caught probably the biggest, although I didn't see this fish, the biggest hybrid striped bass that I have ever seen, you know, a picture of or whatever. And he caught it out of Lake Robinson.
Robinson,
up in Greer. The funny thing about that is they don't stock hybrids in Lake Robinson. Okay?
That's cool, man.
This was a one-of-a-kind. Actually, there's been more than that. I've heard a couple of stories of people catching stripers.
Right.
But those were that fish had been in that lake to attain the size of 15
pounds.
Long
time.
That fish has been in that lake for a long time.
Yeah.
So we got a cool story from that. And then Springer's going to bring us the Roadkill Cafe. I bet I can guess what's on the menu this week.
Go ahead and guess.
It's going to be some turkey.
Yeah. We're doing wild turkey gumbo.
Gumbo.
Yeah. I will play. I will do talk shows. I'll do anything for a good bowl of gumbo.
you know what I'm
talking about, Boat Girl?
Yeah.
I will play for gumbo. That's a good Jimmy Buffett song, by the way. You didn't know that, did you?
Oh, okay.
Boat Girl does.
That's got to be some of that new Jimmy Buffett.
No, not really.
Oh, yeah, since about 1990. We have that discussion all the time. A new Jimmy Buffett is anything since 1990. I'm talking about stuff back from the 70s.
I know, but it's a good song. Anyway.
Wild
Turkey Gumbo.
Yeah, Wild Turkey Gumbo. So it sounds like a good. And then we're going to talk with our buddy, the bass chaplain, Chris Wells. He is, I don't know if he's actually reporting from Bassmaster Classic, but he was there all week. And then, man, Chris is a busy man.
And tonight he's got to be in North Carolina.
Was
he? He's doing a banquet.
He was in Virginia last night.
Right, and tonight it's North Carolina.
In North Carolina.
Doing another banquet.
So we'll talk with Chris about what was going on at the Bassmaster Classic there. And also want to talk with him about a upcoming sportsman's banquet that he has got at his home church at Brushy Creek Baptist
March
Church.
March 21st.
With Clay Dyer.
Yeah.
An amazing motivational speaker.
If I ever catch myself complaining about having to fish in certain conditions,
yeah,
I need to think about that young man.
Absolutely. So looking forward to talking to Chris about that. And then we're going to wrap up the show with our calendar of events.
Got them.
And our parting shot is a story about an angler who was indicted for cheating in a bass tournament. So, and it's funny,
amazing,
not funny.
It's
one of those things, funny, not funny.
It's just amazing. I mean, you know, if you're cheating in a bass
tournament. If you're cheating in a bass tournament. And you know, the thing about that is, once you've ever cheated in a bass tournament, I don't care what level.
You're branded.
You're branded for life.
Exactly.
Okay, once a cheater, always a cheater.
Exactly.
Nobody will ever trust you. Doesn't matter what happens later on.
No, I mean, not if you win a big one somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
No, but anyway.
Everybody, remember that guy when he cheated?
I mean, you know, I might have cheated on a test back in school when I needed, you know, and you know, and I might have cheated every now and then on how big exactly the fish was. But to just go down and cheat in a bass tournament, I don't even think Springer could do that.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Well, speaking of tournaments, it's kind of funny that you say that because it seems like everybody – is in a tournament this weekend.
Yes.
Because you've got, obviously, you got the Bassmaster Classics going on in Knoxville, Tennessee. You've got the Monster Cat Quest catfishing tournament going on down at Santee Cooper. That's being held out of Black's Camp.
A bunch of people there, too.
Oh, yeah. A ton of people.
God.
Listen, folks. I mean, we've tried to tell you on this show.
It's amazing.
Catfishing is huge.
It's huge.
It's sort of, it's the biggest underground fishing
club
community that there is.
Yeah.
And they got the Monster Cat Quest going on at the same time, and I think the folks at Crappy USA are going, dang, why do we pick this weekend? But they've also at Santee, they've got Crappy USA tournament, their regional or state or whatever. They got their tournaments going on at Santee Cooper.
And you got the big high school thing going on.
The big high, all the kids are at fishing at Lake Wiley. With the Palmetto Boat Center, the PBC high school tournament trail. They probably got, I don't know, 200-300 boats out there.
Yeah.
So everybody's in tournament day.
Except me and Phillip.
Springer's going to be in the natural light.
No, man.
The natural light challenge.
No, man, I'm going to get my green on tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'm going to go down the pond and catch a bass.
Yeah. Get your green on.
Money Finney's got Beer Me shirt on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've got that permanently tattooed on my chest, by the way.
Do you? We should do this show shirtless one day.
No.
We'll do that on location.
I would have to wait.
Any sponsors out there during the summertime?
You must wait till I come back from my vacation so Springer has his bronze look on, okay?
We'll do it at the chili cook-off.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll do it shirtless. It's been cold out there the last few
years.
Yeah,
that's my point. Yeah.
It has to be on location because I do not want to see that.
Come on now.
Oh.
Maybe one of the local gyms would put that on.
No.
They could sponsor. We have Upstate Outdoors.
I don't know.
Be the before.
You could be the before.
Yeah, that's it. We could be the before.
Good point, Money Finney. Hey, we've got a lot of miles.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we ain't young bucks.
Yeah,
we've been around, you know.
Yeah, I tell people that all the time. It's not the age that gets you. It's the high mileage.
Exactly, and we got them.
I got scars.
I know, me too.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But looking at great show, really, you know, everybody's at the Bassmaster Classic.
And I think, you know.
After last year when it was here in Greenville and everybody got the fever.
Right.
And now they're going up to Knoxville because that's only about 3 hours away. But, you know, and I got to say this. The Classic will not be the same for me because.
Of everything that's happened.
Well, it's not here, but also what you talked about is everything where they had the split. Because what you got is the what'd you have, like 70 anglers?
At least.
From the Bassmaster Elites that split off and went to Major League Fishing with the Bass Pro Tour.
Yep.
But because if they qualified, they get to come back and fish the Bassmaster Classic.
Yep.
So basically, so far in the 2019 season, you've got anglers who have not been on the tour with the Bassmaster, but who are now fishing the Bassmaster Classic.
Yep.
So
it's confusing.
And then, you know, you go back and the Bassmaster Elites are going to be, I mean, they're going to be here local. They're going to be at Lake Lanier down in Georgia. They're going to be at Lake Hartwell coming up in April.
Yeah, I've got that on the calendar.
They're going to be down at Georgetown.
Right.
Doing that down there again. So they're going to be a lot of locals. But if you're a Bassmaster fan, you're going to, and you're probably already getting used to it, you're seeing a lot of names that you're like,
huh?
Who? Who is this?
Yeah.
And they will. I mean, they got a lot of young stars because basically what they're having to do
opportunities
is,
abroad.
Yeah, man, they're having to start over.
Yeah.
So you're like, why? Well, where's KVD? Where's Casey Ashley?
Right.
Where's Ike? Where's Where's Hack? Where's it? They're all MLF.
Yeah.
So if you're at the Bassmaster Classic, and I imagine it will be sort of a sad because a lot of people are thinking, you know what? In my lifetime, this would be the last Classic that the big stars.
That we grew up watching.
Yeah, that we grew up
watching.
So
it's a It's a seesaw kind of thing.
Yeah. And a lot of folks really don't know how to
Even me.
They don't know how to feel about it. They don't know. They're like, well, I want to go back and watch my old stars, but they're in that new Major League Fishing format that don't make sense.
But in the long run, if it helps and helps everybody that are in that business of professional fishing to profit, well, that's a bad word, to be able to sustain a decent living without the struggle, then more power to all of it.
I get it across the board, and you know, I've had a lot of off-air conversations.
I'm sure.
With people about, you know, well, so-and-so needs to do this, and so-and-so needs to do this, or they should have done this, or should have done that. Well, it is what it is, and it's a lot. And I tell you who's suffering the most, honestly, it's the fans.
I would have to give you an attaboy on
that. The fans are suffering the most because they weren't expecting it, and all of a sudden they got this, and everybody's kind of pretending like, you know, there's a big pink elephant in the room, and everybody's pretending like
everybody's
it's not
walking
there.
Around it.
And they're like, oh, well, we're still fishing, you know.
Yeah.
So fans, it's kind of like, it reminds me a lot of NASCAR.
Exactly.
You know, when NASCAR sort of changed, and suddenly you look around and go,
huh?
This ain't the NASCAR I used to follow. Because I used to follow NASCAR.
Yeah.
I used to follow it.
Daniel Suarez.
Yeah.
Well, he ain't from dadgum Carolina.
Yeah. Never heard of him. So
there you go.
And maybe we'll talk with Chris a little bit about
get
that.
Get a vibe on it.
But the Bassmaster Classic's going on. You still got time if you want to go up there tomorrow. It's what, about 3 hours? Actually, consider doing that. I don't know. That's still in the works. But we'll go to our break now. When we come back, we'll jump into the Upstate Outdoors blog, talking about some recapping some turkey proposals.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, Tommy Springer, Phillip Gentry. We'll be right back. Talk a little turkey on the flip side of the break.
So kind of the plan on the show today, we're going to get into some turkey hunting during the first hour, and then we'll get on to the bass fishing with the Bassmaster Classic going on up in Knoxville, Tennessee. But first, wanted to bring you the Upstate Outdoors blog entitled, Turkey Season Opens Amid Concerns Over Dwindling Numbers. The long-awaited 2019 wild turkey hunting season will officially open on private lands across the state next Wednesday. That's March 20th. This year marks the fourth year since the opening dates were aligned across the state by state legislators. And to remind you, they used to open in the lower part of the state on March 15th, and then it didn't open up here until April the 1st. Now, the opening day for public wildlife management areas, which was not affected by the changing legislation in 2015, will remain at April 1st, and that's across the state. Now, the past legislation changes, and these occurred in about 2015, included a sunset clause, which required the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources to study the season timing and report back to the legislature during the fourth quarter of 2018, and they've done that. Wildlife biologists across the southeastern United States have remarked about an overall decline in wild turkey populations beginning around the turn of the century. Numerous factors have been identified as working together to cause the decline in the southeastern states by as much as 35%. Those factors included habitat change, predators, overhunting, and invasive non-native species competing with the birds. The 2015 legislation change that aligned the season dates also reduced the bag limit for turkeys from 5 to the current number of 3 per hunter per season. Biologists are now concerned that the early season date is additionally adding to poor reproduction of the eastern wild turkey. We did a full-blown study of both turkey hen nesting and male turkey gobbling over the 4 years since the past legislation, said Jay Cantrell, the assistant big game coordinator with DNR. The study was conducted in the southernmost portion of the state to take into account when hens began nesting at their earliest in the state. And what we found was that on average, hens don't go to nest until around the 8th of April. Now, pursuant to the study, which has been published on the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources website, if you want to go there, you can look it up, wildlife biologists with the agency have made a recommendation that the season dates moving forward after 2019 be changed to April 10th through May 15th, and that would encompass a 36-day season. The recommendation also includes a statewide youth day That would be the Saturday prior to April 10th. The same as it is now, they have Saturday before the season opens. It'll be Youth Day. The recommendation has been met with much resistance from state turkey hunters who argue that their individual experience with turkey sightings varies greatly from what the DNR has seen. Some hunters report a more severe decline in the turkey numbers, while others claim that they haven't seen any decline and hadn't seen any changes at all. Want to know why the department's messing with it? And it all depends on who you talk to. Some hunters say they are seeing the same numbers they've always seen, while others say their numbers are way down, said Cantrell. This is what we are trying to address with this recommendation, to give gobblers more time to breed the hens before the hunters get to them. So it makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Officials with DNR feel strongly that moving the start of the season back will help alleviate hunter impact on the wild turkey decline. Many hunters feel the earlier start makes for easier hunting conditions before gobblers become occupied with breeding hens. And that's what Springer and I were talking about. Yep. It's kind of like, if you want to compare this to deer season, so right now we're hunting turkey during the pre-rut.
Pre-rut.
Okay? When they're all out there styling and profiling and out looking and everything. And what they want to do is they want to move it back to breeding. And we talked a lot about the lockdown,
right?
You know, of the rut in deer season when it's like, man, I'm not seeing any deer.
Right.
That's because they're off heeing and sheeing,
right?
You know, with hens and stuff. So they would not open the season until breeding is actively commenced. And then after they're bred, then you kind of get the post-rut, you know, to complete the analogy. That's when the season would take place. Now, as a compromise, an alternative proposal submitted by the department, and we didn't talk about this last week, Jay didn't bring it up. Matter of fact, I didn't even know about it until I was doing some research. An alternate proposal, which was submitted by the department, would allow for, again, another 36-day season, but only starting on April 5th through May the 10th, with also a youth day the Saturday before April 5th. So they would begrudgingly back it up 5 days.
Right.
Now, while recommendations are frequently made by the DNR regarding game and fish regulations, and let me say this so that you understand it, DNR is making a proposal to the legislation. DNR does not set game and fish laws in South Carolina.
Correct.
We're one of three states in the whole country who the Department of Natural Resources doesn't set the game and fish laws. The entire state assembly has to vote. So basically what they'll have to do is they'll find a sponsor.
Yep.
And he'll draw up the proposal, and then it'll go through committee, probably somebody out of Chip Campson is big on
right.
Is in the Senate. But they'll find a sponsor and they'll draw that up, and sometimes they'll adopt the recommendation as is into the bill. And then it'll be heard by committee and go back and forth to the House. It's just like, you know, all legislature. But it has to be passed
right.
by the state legislature. So,
your thoughts?
My thoughts on it, I really don't know where to fall on this, and I don't know that I'm one to ask that question because I'm a crappy fisherman, okay?
I got you.
So if you're looking at PG's calendar, okay, March, PG's on the water.
Yeah.
Trying to catch them big old specks that are doing the same thing. You know, they're now when the crappie go to the bank and start spawning, I start to lose interest in them.
Right.
To me, you catch smaller fish, okay, because they're on the bank, and they're, you know, I like them pre-spawn.
Right.
I like the fish pre-spawn. So to say, okay, well, we're going to back turkey season up to April the 10th, well, I might have a little more, that might fit into my schedule. I might have a little more time. But by the same token, I want them to be as easy to hunt as deer are during the pre-rut, too.
Gotcha.
I want to see them gobblers out there. So it's like, man, I'm just sitting here, and all of a sudden that gobbler walked up because I scratched the leaves a little bit. I don't have to dig right. them out of the bushes.
My thoughts are whatever it takes to help the turkeys, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, I've had real good success late in the season when a lot of the hens have been bred
yep.
and are on nest.
Yep.
These gobblers, man, they only do this for like whatever many days. I
yep.
mean, they don't get to wango tango, but, you know, you got a short window. And a lot of these gobblers, if they're not killed, you'd be amazed what they would do in the middle of the day. Told you the story last week,
and,
okay?
And I think the late season is one of the most overlooked. It's to me, turkey season is a lot like dove season.
Exactly.
Okay. People want to do it opening day, and they want to get out there the first two or three weekends. They want to kill a bird,
right?
And then they're on to
fishing.
Then they're on to fishing, or they're on to something else. Weather's starting to get warm.
That's
I'm gonna go play golf or
that's
whatever,
Philip.
And they don't take advantage of the late season.
Right.
And I'm gonna be honest with you,
late season turkey hunting's tough.
Well, I fall prey to that too. To me. Because it starts getting hot.
Right. There
and
you
I'm
go.
I'm out there in all them clothes,
yep.
trekking around in the woods.
Yes.
The bugs are coming
Nats
out.
Nats so thick you can't even, you need a windshield wiper to keep them out of your
yep.
face.
Yep.
And it gets crazy late in the season.
Bugs,
ticks, weather,
yep.
heat, you name it.
Now, I did kill one a couple years ago on the last day of the season.
There you go.
But it was honestly, like most turkeys I've ever killed, just dumb luck.
Okay.
So
it does. The turkey hunting does get tough late in the season.
But it's like you said, there are, and that's just talking about like, you know, deer hunting in you know, December. When I figured out how to deer hunt in December, I enjoy it.
As much as you do the pre-rut.
I don't know about as much, but it's a close second.
You're able to capitalize.
Yeah, I'm able to capitalize.
There you go.
Well, let's go to our break. When we come back, we're going to ring up Mark Carroll with the Department of Natural Resources and try and get a forecast for what this season is going to be looking like.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station. We'll be back right after the break. Tommy Springer, Philip Gentry, giving it to you.
Well, we have got on the line, our guest is Mark Carroll, regional biologist with South Carolina Department of Natural Resources over in Union County. Mark, welcome to Upstate Outdoors.
Hey, Philip. Thomas, glad to be back.
Glad to have you on here, Mark. Happy Turkey Day, my friend.
Thanks. Y'all too.
Yes, sir.
Well, do you have a story for us, Mark? Do we have a happy youth running around today out in Union County?
Well, we had an excited youth this morning. It didn't turn out quite like we had wanted it to, but we did have a good time and spent a good morning out in the woods.
Always good morning in the woods.
And, you know, a lot of folks talk about success in turkey hunting. You know, that doesn't always mean it's a kill. I mean, if you hear a turkey gobbling, if you have a unique experience, or even if you get fooled by an animal whose brain is no bigger than a pea, you know, it starts to bring everything, you know, down to earth for you.
That's right. And I think the turkey woods is a great way for youth to develop woodsmanship and to really get out. And if you can get a youth away from a video game or the TV for a morning and get out in the woods, I think that's a win any way you go, whether you end up harvesting a bird or not. I think that's a win.
Amen.
Yeah. And so, Mark, looking at we were talking a little bit earlier about the decline in the population of the eastern wild turkey. And this is not something that South Carolina is experiencing, but it's across the southeastern United States and even further. Would you say that the upstate of South Carolina, are our numbers in line with the decline that we're seeing across the board?
We've looked at those numbers. We've done our own research throughout the years, and we've seen that same decline in the turkey trends. You spoke with Jay about this last week. I think 2002 was our peak when we started the decline, and the upstate is consistent with that, in my opinion.
And so as far as some of the research that's done throughout the year, what do you folks do to try to keep up with the turkey numbers?
Well, I think y'all talked about it a little bit last year. They have the harvest report that comes out every year. That's published on our website. Anybody can go look at that. And we also have our brood surveys where we have DNR employees and volunteers riding around just on their daily activities recording turkey hens, gobblers, and poults. And we use that information. We really get a good index. We use all these indices to look at whether we're going up or down. And everything's been fairly consistent.
And, you know, I would think that doing that, especially off-season, would be a little more reliable because, you know, when you start asking people and talking about, well, you know, we need to reduce the bag limit or whatever – a lot of folks will say, well, I got, you know, more turkeys than I've ever seen, and I've been hunting for 50 years. And then you have others who say, man, I hadn't seen a wild turkey in 10 years. So it's kind of hard to calibrate to know if we have a problem or just how severe it is.
Yeah, and, you know, they and Charles are looking at the big picture. You know, like you said, you can talk to one person and they say one thing, talk to another person and they say another. It may depend on where that person spends the majority of their time and when they're looking and if they're looking. You know, some properties have habitat types that are different than others that are more conducive to being able to see a turkey while you're out there.
And I'd have to agree with that, Mark, because where I have hunted over the past 10 or 15 years has had a major influx of industrial, you name it, okay? And that's
development.
That development. And that's just really what's been the coup de grace on the turkey population. It's basically, you know, the deer are still going to hang out there, but for the turkeys, it's a whole new ball game, you know, and they've just kind of up and gone. And, you know, you might see one every now and then, but it's been the development. Where I'm at and an actual loss of habitat, you know, up and down 290. it's an industrial complex these days, you know what I mean, Mark? And that's made all the difference in the world.
That's right.
Well, Mark, as far as the 2019 season, I think the official report from DNR, I think I saw where Charles Ruth had said, not a great season, but looks to be about the same as last year, and I think he classified that as a good season. Can you kind of hone that in for us as far as upstate hunters?
Yeah, so we didn't see any drastic changes in recruitment over the last couple of years. And really what you look at with the turkey populations, as far as from a hunter standpoint, when you have a good turkey year as far as raising poults, you look for another 2 years. If you were to have a increase or decrease, generally your 2-year-old birds are doing some gobbling out there, and a lot of folks kill those birds. You know, 3-4 years old, that's an old turkey sometimes, depending on where you are. But you know, that 2 years after a good hatch year, is when you would see a difference. And we haven't seen that in any of our indices. Whether we should see a big spike or a big drop this year.
And I think one question that a lot of hunters have is will there be any effect this year on all the rain that we've had? Because it seems to me like we've had one of the rainiest falls and winters and early springs that I can remember.
You know, that's a good question. It'd be interesting to see what the brood reports come out for this year. But you know, there's the wet hen theory, which, you know, speaks to predation. A wet hen is easier to find for nest predators, and nest predators do take a significant amount of turkey nests. And that's one of those factors that we talk about contributing to the decline of the turkey population.
Agreed. Absolutely.
I thought they were just mad when it got wet.
A wet hen. Yeah, that's right.
Madder than a wet hen. Maybe
yeah.
That's a chicken.
Yeah.
But, and you know, a lot of folks don't realize, and they want to lay that blame solely on the shoulders of the coyotes. And I got no love for a coyote, no more than anybody else. But there are a lot of predators folks don't realize that range from feral house cats down to raccoons and possums.
And as small as a fire ant.
Yeah, and fire ants and all kind of stuff. So there are a lot of competing factors for turkeys.
Absolutely. There's a lot of predators out there after a turkey. Turkey nests, turkey poults, adult turkeys. I think, you know, one of our biggest predators as far as poults is avian predators. Look at your hawks and your owls.
Amen.
I think they take a significant amount. And then you go back prior to that, your nest predators, your skunks and raccoons and possums and all those, they get their share as well.
And I think what's happened is the possum community has put some money together, and they've got a little better PR firm going on, because all I ever see on social media is, possums are they're sweeter than they look. And they show a cute possum picture, and I'm like, man, that's an egg eater. Put a bullet or hair in that thing.
Lost cat signs with the possum picture on there. I get a
I get a kick out of that.
Exactly. And I tell you, you know, Mark, I've said it all my life, a wild turkey and even young turkeys, they're nothing but the shrimp of the forest.
Yeah.
Everybody wants a piece of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, let me get back and talk about you got out on Youth Day today, and as far as the strategies for hunting turkey, if you're gonna get in the woods on Wednesday, what's gonna be the best strategy trying to find some?
Well, I can speak to what happened this morning, and then this has happened the last several years on Youth Day. I've been taking youth on Youth Day for about the last 10 years. This is just something that I've noticed personally. When I get in there, I hear turkeys gobbling different places, and multiple times I've had turkeys slip in behind me that I wasn't hearing gobble on the roost, and that's exactly what happened this morning. And it was just kind of a blown setup. We set up towards a field where we had some turkeys gobbling with a thicket to our back, had good cover. That's something I really hone in on when I have youth, making sure I have good cover to conceal all that movement, because believe you me, there's a lot of movement going on when you have youth in the woods. Turkeys came in by 80 yards before I heard the first gobble. I just started calling just a little bit, and turkeys have been gobbling for maybe 20 minutes or so, doing some light calling, and I got an answer behind me, and had four come in behind me, and just the thicket in between us and the way we were set up just wasn't going to make it happen with a youth this morning, you know.
And all with a bird with a brain the size of a BB. It's amazing, yeah. Isn't it? Because yeah. I tell you.
That's right. And hopefully we didn't booger that bird up, and we can go back
awesome.
When regular season comes back in and try to give it another shot. But having turkeys strutting, we could see the birds and definitely hear them gobble. Got a little kid's blood pressure up and got him excited. And, I believe I could say the same for myself, you know, whether I've got a gun or not, just, having those birds in there doing their thing, strutting, gobbling, you know, it's a great thing.
And as an old turkey hunter, that's a win in my book every yeah. time.
I want to add on that too. A lot of, when the legislature changed the bag limit down from five birds to three birds, a lot of the diehard turkey hunters didn't bother them whatsoever.
No,
because all
me.
They did, they're like, hey, look, you know, killing the bird, that's just the
icing on the cake.
Icing on the cake. You know, the whole thing is working it. And so I know a lot of folks, once they get their limit of birds or whatever, they'll reach out to another hunter and
yes.
say, hey, you know, you hadn't had the experience. Let me come out there and help you.
Amen.
And maybe guide for you a little bit, and we can go at them together. And everybody still gets to enjoy the experience without having, you know, five birds, you know, taken out of the flock.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I learned something else this morning with the youth. You know, you tend to revert back to the things that your parents did. I remember my dad going deer hunting, taking me when I was young. If I heard it once, I heard it 1,000 times. Pick your feet up. Pick your feet up. And I bet I said it 200 times this morning. Pick your feet up. Pick your feet up. Like a horse coming through the woods, a little kid.
Oh, my goodness.
That is awesome.
That's great stuff, Mark.
Yeah.
Well, Mark Carroll, Department of Natural Resources, regional biologist, thanks for all the great information, and good luck this turkey season. And to all our listeners out there, y'all go get them and let us know how you do.
Will do. Thanks, Philip.
All right. Thanks for having us on. Having you on, Mark. Appreciate it.
The wild turkey season.
Ain't nothing like that in the morning.
Yep. Pinky feet up. Pinky, what's wrong with you?
I got chills on the back of my neck right now. Awesome.
We're going to go to our break. When we come back, we're going to talk about another youth experience out in the wild, a very unusual catch from Lake Robinson.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. Upstate Outdoors is on your radio. Last segment, we were talking to Mark Carroll about youth turkey hunting, the Ute, and what a great time that they had. Just the fact that they were able to work a bird a little bit this morning and got their blood pumping. And I got another great article, found this on Carolina Sportsman, about a kid who, I'm going to tell you what, got his blood pumping. A 9-year-old catching a 15-pound hybrid striped bass on a 13-foot crappie pole with 4-pound test line.
That sounds like something you'd do, Philip.
Makes for a great fishing tail. Yeah, I don't like 4-pound fishing tail. No, I hate that. 4-pound line is.
It's like spider web.
That's when you get it up there and can see him with 4 pounds.
Exactly.
But I'd rather land him with 6 or 8. But anyway, but his family believes it's a much bigger story. They're convinced the huge fish is a symbol of God's hand at work in their lives. The story actually begins with a lost job. The Stouffer family of Taylors had planned a trip to northern Maine to visit relatives and do some hiking in the remote north woods when Mrs. Stouffer learned that her job as a Greenville County crossing guard had been eliminated, stressing the family's financial resources, so the trip was postponed. About the time they'd planned to be hiking in Maine, young Andrew fell ill. After a few days, it became apparent the issue was not just a stomach virus. Doctors determined his appendix had ruptured. He spent a week in the hospital and finally started getting better. And at the end of the week, his mother got a letter advising her crossing guard job had been reinstated. We realized that if we'd gone on the trip as planned, we could have been out in the middle of nowhere when the attack occurred, and he could have died, said his father, Craig Stouffer, who's a facilities manager at Faith Baptist Church in Taylors. God worked it out so that we stayed home and could get him to the hospital. And now to the fishing part of the story. Just 3 days after leaving the hospital in early January, Andrew went fishing in nearby Lake Robinson. That's up in the northern part of Greenville County. He was supposed to go fishing on Monday, but we put that off to another day, his father said. My son is an avid fisherman. If there's a hook in the water somewhere, he wants to be there, he said. Andrew thought that he had a big catfish when something engulfed his live minnow, but it was not a catfish. It was something bigger and harder fighting. Not fully recovered and still weak from his bout with appendicitis, Andrew fought the fish for about 20 minutes before handing the crappie pole over to a friend to pull the exhausted fish in. When Stouffer took the fish to Chip Hamilton at Hamilton Taxidermy over in Easley, he said he had a striper for him to mount. But when Hamilton saw the fish, his jaw dropped. "That's no striper," he said. "That's a monster hybrid." While Andrew's 15-pound, 1-ounce hybrid is off the state record mark of 20 pounds, 6 ounces for the species, is still a huge specimen for the fish, and is the result of a cross between a white bass and a striped bass. And with it now gracing the wall of the Stouffer home, it's a constant reminder of God's role in their lives. Great story.
Great story. How old? You're the hybrid guy. You're anything like that. How old would you think that fish may have to be? Just educated guess.
Well, basically kind of the rule of thumb for like a striped bass,
right,
is a pound a year.
Okay, so there you go.
So I don't know if that works for the hybrid or not. If that's a 15-year-old fish,
right?
But I know they grow for a long, long time.
Yeah,
and that's a huge fish. Like I said, you're crossing this now. Striped bass can get large. I mean,
sure.
I've heard of striped bass being what's the state record is like 58, almost 60
plus pounds.
But you cross that with a white bass,
right,
who tops out at about 5 pounds
on a good day.
Yeah, and that's so, man, a 15-pound hybrid. And then the other thing about that
is... How did he get there?
How did he get into Lake Robinson? Now, that's the easiest part of the whole story.
Okay, all right.
There was somebody that, I don't know at what size that fish was.
Right.
That they threw it in the live well or something up there at Greer, and they were crossing Fuse Bridge.
Yeah.
And they were like, "Dadgummit, I don't want to clean that fish."
There you go.
They threw it in a live well.
Sure.
And they said, "Dadgummit, I don't want to clean that fish. Go down there and throw it at Lake Robinson." And they giggled
sense.
The whole time he did it.
That makes sense.
They threw that thing. And, I mean, there's plenty to eat in there.
Sure.
And I have often lobbied. We had Allison Roush.
Yes.
Rock.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had her. We should have talked to her about that. Although CWP owns the lake, I don't know that they have. Maybe they have final say in stocking. I've always said they should stock hybrids in Lake Robinson.
Right.
It's a big enough lake that it would add that dimension, you know, of the offshore,
right,
predators in there, and you could catch a bigger fish. And what's happened in Lake Robinson is people have dumped white perch in there,
mm-hmm.
so that offshore fish has become the white perch's domain now. And, I mean, you can catch some pretty decent white perch up to a pound and a
sure.
half. But which would you want to regularly catch?
I would rather
that?
Be putting a hook in the one-pound perch you're talking about, yeah. so I can catch a 15-pound hybrid.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, that's tough. But the hybrids end up being a put-grow-and-take fishery.
Right.
But I think, you know, they tried putting smallmouth in Lake Robinson, and it didn't really take.
Makes sense.
I think they could do well putting hybrid striped bass in there, you know, whatever the formula is, X number of fish.
Right.
And then you got a fish that you could regularly catch that's going to be 3 to 5 pounds.
That's fun.
And there's plenty of bait fish. I've been on that lake tons of times, and you look at the graph, and there's tons and tons of bait fish up there.
Awesome.
I think it would actually help the ecosystem of the lake.
And I believe you would be right.
Yeah, but the bass fishermen have,
no!
I ain't going to eat my largemouth bass.
And you're so right about that, yep. Philip.
They would. They would. So anyway, well, let's go to our break, the top of the hour. We come back after the news with the Roadkill Cafe.
Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORE-RD. 1 hour down, one to go. Tommy and Philip, stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.